The topic is pluralism. Okay, what's the issues? The issues as follows. A lot of people come along and say, look, the problem with you ortho types, you orthodox types, is you believe there's just one way to be a good Jew. But many Jews believe in pluralism. That is, there's more than one way to be a good Jew. See, we Westerners believe in that there are pluralistic approaches to every important idea in Judaism. Now, I'm going to try to represent and the second the non-Orthodox approach. Let us say, no, the pluralistic approach, which is generally, if you're going to look at where you'll find them, obviously, in a world where everything's both, I'm sure you're going to find some people believing in it who live in Mea Shearim. But what we're talking about generally is coming up with the alternative views in which there's more than one way to be a good Jew. Pluralism means there shouldn't be just one way of doing anything. For example, we believe in America that America is a pluralistic society. Frankly, I think that's disappearing too, but let's go back to old ways of doing things. America is a pluralistic society. There's more than one way to be a good American. You could be a liberal or a conservative, you could be a Republican, you could be a Democrat. The general understanding was that there are many, you could be a Jew, a Christian, a Muslim, or an atheist, and nobody has a right to say that you're worse of an American because you're one or the other. And therefore, if America is a pluralistic society, meaning there's more than one way to be a good American, we believe that Judaism is pluralistic, that there's more than one way to be a good Jew. So, for example, in general, I love to have you guys participate a little bit. If I don't hear from anybody, I'll do it myself. In general, which groups within the Jewish world show a very strong favoritism toward Judaism as a pluralistic idea, that there's more than one way to be a good Jew? Generally, which groups would you find saying that?
Probably the reform and conservative communities.
Reform, conservative, secular, right? They believe that Judaism ought to be pluralistic. There should be more than one way. And generally, you'll find in the Orthodox world saying, opposed to that, say there's only one way. The problem is, let's suppose, devil's advocate here. Supposing I would want to hear a very good argument by a spokesman for the non-Orthodox alternatives to provide the fact that there's more than one way to be a good Jew, that pluralism is a legitimate way of seeing Judaism. What is the best argument they could bring? Let me tell you what would not be a good argument. Whenever you argue with somebody, you don't want to say, well, I'll prove it because at the recent International Conference of Reform Rabbis, they passed a resolution saying Judaism is and therefore ought to be pluralistic. Why is that not a good way of arguing it? Because each group, you can't quote the authority of your group. The best argument you could make for any argument that you have with somebody is pointing out that even the world that accepts your view believes there's more than one way to be a good Jew. So that let me give you an example. It's called Lishi Tosfa. In the Gemara, whenever you're trying to prove a point, when there are two rabbis that disagree, each one is then trying to bring a source authority from that which his Bar Pluta, the guy who's arguing with him, also accepts as authoritative. So, for example, if you have two Amoraim, two rabbis in the Gemara, they are Each one will try to bring examples from a Mishnah or a Braisa, means an authoritative halachic source, authoritative to both of the rabbis, to say, well, based on this statement, and you believe that that source is authoritative just as I do, isn't it clear that according to them, I'm right in my assessment? And the other rabbi has to either concede the point or point out a difference, perhaps a subtle difference, between what we're arguing about, where I think I'm right, and that case is a little different, which I would agree that in that case, the law would be more into your way of seeing it. But there's a difference, subtle perhaps, which you chose. So, and therefore, at the other hand, every time you're trying to prove a point, the best proof you can give is from the authorities, on his side, on the other side. For example, if I'm arguing with a Reform guy about the problems of Jewish continuity, in which the Reform movement finds it very difficult to last more than three or four generations before their kids intermarry, instead of quoting an Orthodox article or an Orthodox book, I'd quote a Reform one, in which an Reform authority saying, we have a major problem. Do you see the idea? You always want to bring proof from that is authoritative to the other side to show the likelihood that you're correct. So now, when the Reform guy wants to prove that there's more than one way to be a good Jew, he can't say, well, because Reform rabbis say so. He can, by the way. You have a right. You have a right to say, I believe in the in a particular group, and that's it. But if you're trying to argue the point, win an argument with somebody on the other side, you can do much better if you try to point out source authorities from that person's side as well. So can you, what kind of argument would the Reform guy bring to say, not only do I, as a Reform Jew, believe that Judaism, that there's more than one way to be a good Jew, that Judaism is pluralistic, I'll prove it from your side. I'm going to prove from the Orthodox side that there's more than one way to be a good Jew.
Well, he could point out that we have like Hasidim and Haredim, and we accept all these groups, and we say they're all valid, but they have different ways of worshiping.
Very good. You see Jacob's point? Very good. He would try to point out, and they do in their article, you have in the Orthodox world, there's Ashkenazim and Sephardim. You have Hasidic, you have modern Orthodox. And while you have your differences among each other and argue, but you definitely accept that their rabbis are rabbis and that their marriages are marriage and their divorces are divorce, right? In other words, the Reform guy says, it's very clear from Orthodoxy that there's more than one way. Very good. Can you give me another example, not from present day Orthodoxy, but evidence in history, which would point out the differences can be there, but both sides accept the legitimacy of the ones they argue with.
Like Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, like Gemara.
Well, excellent, excellent. Picture 2,200 years ago is practically modern Jewish history. 2,000 years ago, in the Mishnaic period, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, the house of Shammai, the school of Shammai, the school of Hillel, in which they will differ at a number of different points of law. And it's a picture. In any given case, Beit Shammai would say that such an act, doing a particular act, is forbidden on Shabbat. Beit Hillel says it's permitted. And so they're having a dispute where in a certain case, what Beit Hillel says is okay, Beit Shammai says is a violation of Shabbat. And yet they accept the essential integrity of the other side, saying you're making a mistake, but you're just as good as I am. And a Jew can choose to follow Hillel or Shammai. I think he's better. Listen, I think we're right, but if he does it your way, I can take him to the fine. But who's making a mistake? So in other words, not only do you look at 21st century Orthodox to show there's a wide range of pluralistic alternatives, history as well, by Shammai and Beit Hillel. I just mentioned Ashkenazi and Sephardi, not only in the modern world, but that developed throughout history. That Sephardim say certain things are allowed to be eaten on Pesach, which Ashkenazim don't, and both sides accept that they do it their way, we'll do it their way. and perfectly legitimate. 200 years ago, when the Hasidic movement started, 250 years ago, I suppose, late 1700s, the classical Orthodox world, it's not called the Lithuanian world, the opposition to Hasidic, had a field day, like neo-Christianity, etc. But now, both Hasid and Misnagdim, each one will say they hold their way better. They think the other ones may be treading in dangerous ground, but they all say that they're fine Jews. So you see, the Reform guy says it's not just Reform that says so. It's very clear that before Reform, you had Hasid and Misnagdim, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, etc. And therefore, they make a very good initial case. Isn't there more than one way to be a good Jew, even according to the Orthodox? And it is very important to understand that you have to understand what is the Orthodox argument and what is not. Because when the Orthodox guy says, no, there's only one way to do it, then the Reform guy has actually made his case very well. Because the Orthodox says there's only one way. The history of Torah Jewry before Reform, in what we call the Orthodox way of seeing things, has a range of possibilities that are acceptable. What we have to understand is, yes, if you're going to define pluralism, that there's more than one way to be a good Jew, we accept that as well. What we're saying is that while there's a range of possibilities, there are legitimate Jewish alternatives, there's a limit beyond which you can't go. And we're saying, A, there's a limit beyond which you can't go, which, of course, we're going to have to prove. And B, we believe, when we look at those limits, we believe that the Reform and conservative movements have gone beyond those limits. So the Reform guy says, okay, I know there's more than one way. You're saying, but there are limits. Prove. But Rabbi, if you really want to convince me, you might not only have to tell me where the limits are, you have to prove to my satisfaction as a Reformed Jew that there are indeed limits, which I do accept. Ah, so now where would I go to prove that while there are a different range of Jewish possibilities, of alternative beliefs and practices, where would I go to prove that there are limits beyond which you can't go? I'll give you a hint. Where did you go? Where did Jacob go? If there's anybody, there are a few others listening. Where did Jacob go to prove the point that there's more than one way? I'm looking for a one-word answer. Where did Jacob go to prove the point that there's more than one way acceptable?
Gemara, Torah?
He went to Torah, he went to Gemara, but
history.
Very good. Excellent. Excellent. In other words, do you see, Jacob, that when you're making an argument, just as I said about, you want to go to the broadest range, say about Gemara and Torah, that's legit. The other guy's going to look a little askance at it. If you realize that just Mr. Reform, and I do want to always have arguments with people, differences of opinion, respect for the personal. If he cares about the idea, we should have respect for the person. Just as the Reform guy said, I can prove in history, through his past history, that there's more than one way to be a good Jew, I'm going to use the same area, namely history, the way things worked in Jewish history, to prove that there are limits, even according to Reform. So now, give me an example in history, where there's some differences the Jews wanted to bring into their Jewishness, in which not only do we consider them a breakaway, but even Reform considers them a breakaway.
The Sadducim and probably the Christians.
One most obvious is early Christianity. You had a group of people who said, well, there's some things we accept in Judaism, some things we reject, some things we will modify. In which, whether it's either early Christianity or in the more modern sense, 21st century Judaism, Jews for Jesus, or Messianic group, in which both Orthodox and Reform say, you're out. That is not Judaism. In other words, just as you can know that Orthodox agrees there's more than one way, I can know that Reform and Conservatives say there are limits beyond which you can't go. And early Christianity, Jews for Jesus, we see it historically, where even in the history books written by Reformer conservative movements, they talk about the Sadducees of 2,000 years ago, the Karaites of 1,200 years ago, as breakaway movements, if only because in practice they did break away. No longer among us. And so you see, actually, we Jews like focusing on our differences. Let's look at what we agree on now. What we've now come up with is that Orthodox will agree with Reform that there's more than one way, that you can differ. You can, in other words, picture the idea of Democrats and Republicans, or at least it used to be like this. Each one would make debates when they're running for office, and they say, I think my way is better, but you are a legitimate alternative. And if you win the election, you're not a communist, you're not a Nazi, you are it's a legitimate win. And so we find the Orthodox position agrees with the Reform position that there's more than one way that is a legitimate alternative. But what we're saying is, whether they understand it or not, the Reform is agreeing with the Orthodox view, which says there are limits beyond which what you're doing is not Judaism. Remember, you're still a Jewish person. There's a difference between being Jewish, and we're not going to talk this time. Next session, we'll be talking about what are the practical applications. So once you differ about what is Judaism, you will de facto make a practical difference of who's Jewish. That's next week. This week, what we're saying is Orthodox agrees with the Reform that it's more than one way. Reform does agree with Orthodox, whether they know it or not. There's limits beyond which you can't go. Christianity, Jews for Jesus, Sadducees, Karaites, right? So now the real question is, how do you know where to set the limits? In these terms, we would say that while we talk about Orthodox Judaism as Torah Judaism, but in fact, I can show you that the Torah concept that we will lay out is actually the historically most viable understanding that we will find. I'm going to go through briefly the four basic principles that identify Judaism in the Orthodox view. And we will find that every group in history that accepted those four were seen as legitimate pluralistic alternatives. And anyone who dropped even one of them is a breakaway. There are four basics. Number one, and without going into Rambam's Maimonides' 13 principles, the truth is the 13 principles really break down to three. The first five principles, Maimonides, is God, the belief in one God. And there are five principles which define what we mean by God and what we define by one. Then there are four principles that define Torah, that God gave the Torah, both written and oral. It's the four principles of the Torah, God's information to us as to how to create the relationship between God and man, how to create the ideal human being, connection to God, and four principles on practical application, reward and punishment, coming of Mashiach, resurrection of the dead, the four principles of the effect that God who gave a Torah, and what are the central effects of that reality, and revolve around reward and punishment. So what we have is, number one, belief in one God. Number two, God gave the Torah. Number three, the Torah is eternally binding. See, and I'll see for a moment why we need that. And number four, that the oral law is God-given and binding. Why do I do that? First of all, anytime you'll have the Reform guy saying, well, isn't there more than one way? You have Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel. They quoted in their own magazines and papers. Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, and Ashkenaz and Sfard. Yeah. And you will find that every time you find a group that is a pluralistic alternative, that both Orthodox and Reform can agree are legitimate alternatives, they all agree on these four principles. Ashkenaz and Sfar, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, Hasidim Misnagdim. That there's one God who transmitted Torah to the Jewish people. Number two, that the Torah is eternally binding. We'll see why we put that in as Torah. And number four, that the Torah is both written and oral form. Because we'll find that Christianity, which seems to be another religion, Christianity accepts the first two principles. We believe there's one God and he gave a Torah to the Jewish people. The problem is that what they change is three and four. Number one, we don't accept the definition of God that Judaism talks about, one absolute infinite source. They can identify that a human being can be God as well. And most important, the Christian says there's one God, he gave a Torah to the Jew. But they reject that the Torah is eternally binding. It really was important for a while, but that at a certain point, belief in Jesus replaced Torah as the way to connect to God. And of course, then they reject the oral law. Because in the massive differences of how they study the Tanakh, the Jewish Bible, it certainly has nothing to do with the principles of the oral law. And so if you have two, another religion, and by the way, Islam would work similar, but Islam was never a Jewish group that broke away. It was actually a Gentile group who accepted principles of Judaism. What we have is that Christianity accepts two of the basic principles of Judaism, but rejects the other two. That makes them another religion. What about the Karaites or the Sadducees? Sadducees were 2,000 years ago. They rejected the oral law, meaning they believed in one God. They accepted one God. They accepted God gave the Torah. They accepted the Torah is eternally binding. They just rejected principle number four, that the oral law is equally God-given and binding. We won't go into now what is oral. Oral law is definition, meaning if you believe that God said not to murder, but you don't have any definition that God gave you to what makes murder, he hasn't told you anything. If God says don't steal, but you have no definitions of what makes an act theft and what doesn't, then he said nothing. In fact, I could make a good case that Adolf Hitler can accept the first three principles. There's a God who gave a Torah that's eternally binding. As long as I write the oral law, I write the definitions of the words in the Torah. But we'll put this aside. What we're trying to point out is that any group that rejected one or more of those principles is a breakaway. Again, the Sadducees and Karaites accepted three principles, rejected the oral law, they're a breakaway. The Christians accepted two principles and rejected two, it's another religion. All right, now I'm saying to the Reform guy, now look at what we really have here. Is that pluralism? To be a Reformed Jew in good standing, does a Jew have to believe in God? Well, it's already been given out by various Reformed positions that you can doubt, you can think, you don't really know. You have some people, especially in the Reconstructionist movement, which some of them see themselves as Reformed and Reconstructionist, that I'm not sure if we have to believe in God. But that's the closest it'll get, because the Reform movement explicitly rejects that God gave the Torah, and saying God said not eat pork chops, we're going to do it anyway. That they see Torah as a man-made document. That's what God would want. So even if the Reformed Jew accepts God, he rejects the God-given. And by the way, I'm not saying any Reformed Jew, because there are some of them who are Orthodox. They just have their own. It's a different issue. I'm talking about the movement, the Reform movement. The movement distinctly sees Torah as a man-made document, and therefore, of course, the Torah couldn't be eternally binding if God didn't say it. And it's that the oral law is not God-given and binding. And therefore, see, you start with the idea the Reform guy says there should be more than one way to be a good Jew. The Orthodox guy then makes a mistake and says, oh, no, there's only one way. And you've given the win to the Reform guy, because there's more than one way to be a good Jew. What you need to understand is that both logically and historically. Of course, there's more than one way. It's just without a definition of what are the limits, you have no concept at all. See, try to picture idea. For instance, I'm a Christian. Oh, you believe in Jesus? No, no, I'm a Christian. I don't believe in Jesus. I believe in the Trinity. Well, what's the Trinity? Mao Zedong, Karl Marx, and Vladimir Lenin. You know, again, I may believe that there are different range of possibilities of what's a Christian, but what you just said is not included. You can't have something as simple as a chair or a shirt without a definition that would identify the wide range of chairs, but some things are not chairs. Are you wearing a watch now, Jacob? Oh, okay.
No.
Are you wearing a shirt?
I am wearing a shirt, yeah.
Well, is it a chair or a shirt?
I'd say it's a shirt.
Yep, that's right. Not a chair. All right. And it's, without definitions, you have no words meaning anything. So,
but Rabbi, kind of question.
Let me just 30 seconds. I want to then go to question answer. That what we're talking about is the logical thing that there's more than one way, of course, because you know, there's always a range of possibilities. The Jewish concept is that as a historic, both as a Torah system, but even as a historical phenomenon, the reason that so many Christians realize that Jews for Jesus is an outrage, they're saying, I'm a Christian, that's fine, but don't fool around. There's a difference. It's one or the other. Something's Jewish, it's not Christian, and vice versa. You know, I mean, people use words to think well. And therefore, what we're saying is, of course, there's more than one way to be a good Jew, but never in the history of the Jewish people was there a more radical breakaway than the present-day conservative reform, perhaps because of secularism, in which we end up with the situation where the Christians who believe in God and Torah, but because of their differences, they're another religion, are still more accepting of these principles of Judaism than the modern breakaways of conservative reform. Yeah, I know, Jacob. We'll have a little time for questions.
The Reform movement, couldn't they argue, though, that like the Orthodox, Haredi, Ashkenaz, Sephardi, whatever, those groups have created just these four rules to exclude them, essentially, and that they would still consider themselves Jews? They could still just argue that these four rules are just made up by us. It's a strong argument. Like, it seems to be implicit in the Torah, but they don't really care about the Torah necessarily in the first place. So.
No, the person who doesn't care doesn't talk about it. The reason they don't say it, because since Reform started around the year 1800 and Judaism has been around for over 3,000 years, yes, we can look at the principles of Judaism in which it's very clear by seeing other breakaways who accepted more of it, that we can see from the Jewish world, just history. In other words, you don't have to be a believer in Judaism. You don't believe in any religion to study history and realize Judaism is. When we see that what was the range of beliefs and what were the conflicts in which some left Judaism, that those four principles are there, not because I'm an Orthodox Jew, not even if I'm a Jew, is that a historian would understand that the basic point is, throughout history, one God, God-given Torah, the Torah is eternally binding, and the oral law. In other words, looking at what was seen in history as a legitimate alternative and what was seen as a breakaway, it has its own definition. By the way, and we're not just talking, I'm saying, like I just said about Christianity, Jacob. A guy comes and, well, I'm a Christian. There's so many different types. I believe that Jesus was replaced by whatever. You know? And it's really Buddha, Confucius and whatever. Again, I don't have to be a Christian to know that he's not describing Christianity is a 2,000-year-old movement. It's a set of beliefs. And while there is a range of what they are, it's very clear what he just said is not Christianity. It's horrible. And you can know that without being a member of the group. Good idea.
Yeah.
Keep in mind also that just like you need a definition to in order to know the difference between a chair and a shirt, to figure out what that person's definition is, and then force the issue by saying, where do I see historically that was the definition? And Jacob, the reason that it's important is because it's likely that by the time the person's making the argument with you, in other words, there are going to be two types of people who will argue the issue. One of them will say, I never thought of that, and you can make a difference then. Another one will say, well, I'm just trying to cover my tail on this. And in that case, he may not care what you have to say. We're saying that the person who cares about thinking about it will make a difference. How you doing, Daniel?
Thank God, Rabbi. How are you?
Baruch Hashem. So we're into...
I've been listening the whole time.
Oh, no. Okay. We're into the question and answer period.
I'm trying to think if I have any questions here.
Okay. Let's quick. I want to hear 30 seconds for each of you. Jacob, where are you now? What are you? Are you in school?
I'm at YU. It's going pretty well. Thank God. Not much is going on, but I have morning shiur, night seder, and just work.
Nice guys there.
Good guys. Not as many ish guys as I would have thought. It's good. And they might be at like Landers and Shai Yashiv. They might be at
No. I'm sure they're nice kids, nice guys there too.
Yeah. We have good guys.
Daniel, what are you doing? Where are you now?
I got back from Israel about a month ago, visiting ish. I just finished a software engineering course. And right now I'm working with a couple of friends from that on some freelance work. I might also be redesigning like a Shul website, and that's all while I'm applying for full-time positions.
Where are you living?
I'm in Chicago. I'm in between apartments in New York. So I was in Teaneck with my family, actually, because we were temporarily in Teaneck. And then I'll be on the Upper West Side with a couple of friends in a few months.
Very nice. What's the Chicago corner?
Well, it's technically Skokie, so it's like Church Street and Hamlin.
Well, I mean, what's going on in Chicago?
Same old. With my dad, huh?
I have a little connection. I have a daughter, a married son, a married daughter living in Chicago.
Yeah, you visited on Pesach. I took you around actually a little bit.
A while back?
Yeah, I actually brought you to my home for about an hour.
Oh, man. How long ago?
Maybe like 5 years ago, 6 years ago by now. It's a while.
It was BC.
Yeah.
Before Corona.
Much BC.
BC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you. Flying isn't nearly as much fun as it used to be, but yeah, I remember I came to, I spent a Pesach at my son's house in Peterson Park.
Yeah.
Sweethearts, it was a pleasure to have you guys. Now, for those of you going to be showing up, today was theoretical. Is there more than one way to be a good Jew? And what it really says is that a Reformed Jew is still a Jew. Conservative Jew, a secular Jew is still a Jew. So in that case, somebody would say, well, if no matter what, you're still Jewish, what's the difference? So if today we talked about pluralism, is there more than one way to be a good Jew? We're going to be looking next week, what is the practical difference when we differ on what is Judaism? And a little bit of the hint is, picture the idea that early Christians, when Jesus died and the guy said, well, I still, you know, he's the Messiah, we still considered him Jewish. But that they made a mistake about thinking he's Moshiach. Why is it, what happened in the last 2,000 years? We're going to talk about that next week. But if the followers of Jesus were Jewish, and we tell them they made a mistake, but they're Jewish, why is it that now we would say if a person is a Christian, you know, got a billion Christians, that we say that there are 12 million Jews like us, and a billion Jews who are Christian? No, we're saying they're not Christians, they're Jews. What? How did that take? How did that change take place? Where 2,000 years ago, we all said they were Jewish, but we differ about Mashiach. And what happened that turns it in which, oh, just what everybody says, they're not Jewish? Take the theoretics of today and we'll apply it to the practical things that it creates in history.